It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Ukraine and elections in India continue. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. NATO has released some satellite photos showing what the border looks like in Ukraine. 40,000 Russian troops massing at the border along with tanks, aircraft and other hardware said to be from Moscow. Awaiting orders. That satellite intelligence comes as the government in Kiev seeks to defuse tensions in eastern Ukraine, where pro-Russian protesters seized control of government buildings earlier this week and issued demands for a vote on joining the Russian Federation. The UN Security Council has approved expanded peacekeeping forces of 10,000 soldiers and 1,800 police for the Central African Republic. The group will become operational in September and replace the current African peacekeeping force that is there now. French Ambassador Gerard Araud told reporters the African and French forces have been working hard on the ground, but the security situation remains volatile and the authorization of the new UN force will be a turning point.
Their mandate under Chapter 7 will focus on protection of civilians, restoration of law and order, support to humanitarian access, monitoring of human rights, and fight impunity.
Also at the Security Council on Thursday, U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power, who visited the Central African Republic this week, said the violence in the country has brought it to the edge of disaster. India's election moved to the country's heartland Thursday, a region that will play a critical role in deciding the political fortunes of the ruling Congress Party. Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi.
Spread over 14 states and territories and covering some 110 million voters, Thursday's vote was the first big round. It will decide the fate of 91 parliamentary seats. But nowhere was it as crucial as in the populous Uttar Pradesh, where ballots were cast in the west. The North Indian state sends 80 lawmakers to the 543-member house and is famously known as the route to power in the Indian capital. Voting has been largely peaceful, but on Thursday, suspected Maoist rebels blew up a jeep, killing at least two paramilitary soldiers. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
A frontrunner in Afghanistan's presidential vote wants to see a transparent vote count in this month's election. When asked about a possible runoff, former Afghan Foreign Minister Abdullah Abdullah told VOA on Thursday that it's more important the process be fair and legitimate regardless of who ultimately wins the April 5th vote. In a separate interview with Reuters news agency, Abdullah ruled out forming a coalition government in order to avoid a second runoff election.
The team which will govern Afghanistan, it will not be an exclusive team. The inclusiveness is part of our strategy. But that does not suggest that we are making a coalition government in order to avoid a runoff or anything like it.
Afghanistan's Independent Election Commission says more than 45% of ballots have been entered into its data system and that a partial vote count cannot be released until at least 20 of 34 provinces are counted. That's not expected to be complete on the final tally until mid-May. South African runner Oscar Pistorius returned to the witness stand in his murder trial Thursday, with prosecutors trying to portray him as self-centered in his relationship with girlfriend Reeva Steenkamp, who he's accused of killing in February of 2013. Lead prosecutor Jerry Nell focused on the apology Pistorius made when he began his testimony earlier this week.
You never thought about them. You never thought how they would feel sitting in the public gallery of a court whilst you make an apology. Did you think how they would experience that, or did it only matter about Pistorius, Oscar Pistorius?
Nell also accused Pistorius of not taking responsibility and being a negligent firearm owner. A glitch in internet software meant to protect online transactions has exposed millions of passwords, credit card numbers, and other sensitive bits of information to theft by computer hackers. Security researchers this week revealed the breakdown known as Heartbleed.
That's quite a lot of data and the most sensitive kind of data. So I think that people are right to be surprised about the level of magnitude and to be a little worried.
The glitch went undetected for more than 2 years, and privacy experts are advising change passwords. I'm Marty Johnson, VOA News, Washington. More news, voanews.com.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN Security Council approves a new peacekeeping force for Central African Republic.
Their mandate under Chapter 7 will focus on protection of civilians, restoration of law and order, support to humanitarian access, monitoring of human rights, and fight impunity.
Gerard Araud is the French ambassador to the United Nations. Violence against Muslims in the Central African Republic reinforces calls to partition the country. The DRC government says its military offensive reduces the strength and numbers of armed groups, and ECOWAS is optimistic of a successful Guinea-Bissau election on Sunday.
The preparations that we have seen so far from our officials on the ground, we are quite positive that there will be free, fair, and credible elections. We can only ask the people of Guinea-Bissau to also commit themselves.
Sonny Ugo is communications director for ECOWAS. Kenyan police are accused of seeking bribes as they crack down on illegal Somali immigrants. And migration officials say there's been a tenfold increase in the number of African migrants intercepted off the coast of Italy. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations Security Council unanimously agreed on Thursday to authorize a nearly 12,000-member UN peacekeeping force for the violence-plagued Central African Republic. VOA's Margaret Bashir has details from the United Nations.
The force, which will be known by the acronym MINUSCA, will take over on September 15th from the 6,000-troop African mission currently in the Central African Republic. The UN mission will have 10,000 soldiers and 1,800 police. The Africans and about 2,000 French troops have been trying to restore calm in the Central African Republic following intercommunal fighting that erupted in December, with mainly Christian anti-Balaka militias attacking Muslim Seleka rebels in Bangui. Seleka forces overthrew the government just more than a year ago. International forces are trying to end continuing reprisal attacks and restore law and order to halt a growing humanitarian crisis that has displaced around 1 million people and left more than half the country's 4.6 million population in urgent need of aid. CAR Foreign Minister Toussaint Kongo-Doudou welcomed the creation of the new force, saying the hopes of an entire nation ride on it. He is heard here through an interpreter.
Today, the adoption of this resolution authorizing the deployment of MINUSCA is the start of a decisive phase in the process of restoring peace and security and hence stabilizing the Central African Republic.
The minister said his country's transitional authorities are committed to national reconciliation, combating impunity, and holding national elections no later than next February. French Ambassador Gerard Araud told reporters the African and French forces have been working hard on the ground, but the security situation remains volatile, and the authorization of MINUSCA will be a turning point.
Their mandate under Chapter 7 will focus on protection of civilians, restoration of law and order, support to humanitarian access, monitoring of human rights, and fight impunity.
The African troops will continue their military activities until the transfer date in September. Many of those troops may also join the new UN mission. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power visited the Central African Republic this week. She says the violence the country has witnessed has brought it to the edge of disaster.
Untold horrors continue in small villages throughout the countryside, and more than 19,000 Muslims are trapped in the capital, too afraid of anti-Balaka forces to leave their hiding places.
She said the United States would continue its assistance to the country. Washington has committed up to $100 million to support restoring security and an additional $67 million for humanitarian needs since January. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The United Nations says 19,000 Muslims in the Central African Republic remain in imminent danger and should be relocated to safer towns further north or outside the country. But it is a complex issue as tens of thousands of Muslims have already fled their homes in the capital and the western half of the country following attacks. Some local authorities worry that further evacuations could deepen divisions and reinforce calls for a partition of the country. Viewers and Look reports from Bangui.
The CAR is a country divided. Muslims are effectively separated from Christians. In the Muslim part of Bangui's PK-12 neighborhood, some talk of eventual reconciliation. Others divorce. This resident, Mustafa Nas, says that's what I want. If we separate the country, he says, everyone can be at peace. 2,000 Muslims are stuck here in PK-12 along a short stretch of road. They cannot risk going out. French and African Union troops stand guard. But trouble still makes its way in, almost daily. UN agencies are preparing to relocate the Muslims of PK-12 farther north to towns that have agreed to accept them. Across town in the Muslim PK-5 neighborhood, many have left. Others want to go, though there are no immediate plans to evacuate them. PK-5 resident Haroun says we are in an open-air prison. We are held hostage. We don't feel safe. We want to go north, where we can be free and earn our livings. There are about 10,000 Muslims left in PK-5, confined to about a 1 kilometer radius since December. The government has asked the residents to stay. January and February saw much of the country's Muslim minority flee attacks in the south and the west. The largely Christian anti-Balaka militia were seeking revenge for abuses committed by the mostly Muslim Seleka rebels. International troops escorted huge convoys of Muslims out of Bangui and other zones. Some went to Cameroon and Chad, others to towns in the north and the east, areas still under rebel control. The mass exodus saved lives. The government is against more evacuations, but acknowledges it can do little to protect Muslims still in danger. The rebels who make up the now ex-Seleka coalition appear divided on the idea of partition for now. General Mohamed Dafan, second vice president of the ex-Seleka coalition, says he is against. He told VOA that within Seleka there is a strong majority that wants partition. He says they feel they are no longer accepted, that the N'Djamena Accords have not been applied, and so there is no sharing of power. So he says there are people in all legitimacy calling for partition. But he says there are others, including myself, who are against. And look, VOA News, Bangui.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister says joint military offensives launched by the National Army, known as the FARDC, and the United Nations mission to the DRC, known as MONUSCO, to protect unarmed civilians has reduced the number of rebel groups from 55 to about 20. Lambert Mende tells reporter Peter Clarty the DRC administration is grateful for the cooperation it has received from MONUSCO to raid the country of armed groups.
When we ended the war against M23, we have accounted more than 50, something like 55 armed groups to disarm in Congo. And thanks to the combination of offensive of FARDC and assistance of MONUSCO, we managed now to reduce from 55 armed groups to 21 or less. And we hope that this phenomenon will end very soon in our country.
Threats still exist, as some people say in the country, that the rest of the armed groups are still terrorizing the population. Do you have plans to further reduce these remaining armed groups?
Of course, we reduced their territorial expansion, but wherever they are still armed groups, they are terrorizing our people. That is why we are after them, we are crushing them, and our armed forces are fighting them. That is the reason. But they are still small, but they are still dangerous.
What about the FDLR?
FDLR, you know, they are in North Kivu and the South Kivu provinces. We started, you know, searching them and crushing them only in 2004. And when we started, the number of FDLR combatants were amounting something like 7,000 to 8,000. Now they are less than 1,000. So we can say that a lot have been done in crushing those guys, forcing them back to their country, or neutralizing them. Unless they can present themselves, they can avoid a very bad fate.
Does that mean that within the coming days there will be fresh military offensive against the FDLR since the government wants to, as you put it, finish them off?
We have started this last campaign 3 weeks ago. Before, we had something like 7 or 8 campaigns that ended by reducing their number from 8,000 to less than 1,000. Now the last campaign has started 3 weeks ago, and we hope that in weeks or months to come, they will totally disappear.
Lamba Mende is DRC's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kinshasa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Friday, April 11th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, and Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda. The time of Daybreak Africa is 16 minutes past the hour. Somalis in Kenya say police are systematically soliciting bribes during an ongoing crackdown on suspected illegal immigrants. But as VOA's Gabe Jaslow reports from Nairobi, police have denied the allegations.
20-year-old Farhia, born in Kenya, lives in a small apartment in Nairobi's predominantly Somali Eastleigh neighborhood. VOA visited her just minutes after the police searched the home.
They
came to my house just now, she said. I showed them my student ID, then my birth certificate. They were not interested in either of that. They told me to give them money and they will release me. Farhia says she gave them 5,000 shillings, or about $60, to avoid being arrested. For residents of Eastleigh, these shakedowns have become a common occurrence, with police visiting the same home up to 6 times a day, sometimes knocking in the middle of the night. Somalis say the police call them ATMs, human cash machines. Others say police have taken jewelry, smartphones, and other valuables. The door-to-door searches are part of a crackdown on illegal immigrants, following recent attacks and threats on the country claimed by Somali militants. Police say hundreds of people have been arrested and at least 82 have been deported to Somalia since operations began last week. Mohammed Hussein Ma'alim lives in the same apartment as Farhia. He says he would not have an issue with the operation if it was carried out responsibly.
With those persons who have no ID, who have no identification cards, who are illegal in this country, return them back to their country. We wouldn't have any problem and we are happy with that.
Masood Mwini, spokesperson for Kenya's National Police Service, says he is aware of the accusations of police bribery, but adds he has not received any formal reports.
We are hearing people making allegations through various avenues in the media, and we have told them if it is indeed true that there are any police officers engaged in any professional malpractices, they should formally report to us so that we can investigate.
The Al-Qaeda-linked militant group Al-Shabaab, which claimed responsibility for the deadly terrorist siege at Nairobi's Westgate shopping mall last year, has vowed retaliation for Kenya's military presence in Somalia. A shooting at a church last month and the unexplained killing of a radical Muslim cleric have also raised tensions in the country. Ma'alim, who studies at a technical college in Nairobi, says there is a growing mistrust of Somalis in Kenya.
One problem: people lost faith in me. All my friends, no one trusts me. All the classmates whom we studied together don't trust me. Tomorrow I want to vie for the chairmanship in the student council in the campus. I can't vie because I'm a terrorist. I'm branded with that name.
Police say operations will continue across the country to find illegal immigrants living in smaller towns and cities and to seek out those who may have escaped Nairobi during the first sweep. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, is cautiously optimistic that Guinea-Bissau's elections scheduled for this Sunday will be transparent, free and fair. This followed an official visit to the country on Thursday by ECOWAS Chairman and Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama, who met with stakeholders in the run-up to the Sunday's election. ECOWAS Communications Director Sonny Ugo tells reporter Peter Clotty that ECOWAS was able to raise about $20 million to help organize the election as part of a regional effort to restore constitutional rule in Guinea-Bissau.
Understandably so. I mean, considering the time, the resources that the Indonesian community, particularly ECOWAS, has invested in this process. If you recall, at one point there was this possibility that it was not going to happen, largely because of the financial requirements and, of course, the administrative requirements that needed to be made prior to the election. There was some grounds for street rallies and then pledged some $20 million to support that process. And a significant part of that amount has been redeemed, just in order to make sure that all the financial positions are made for the American states, because we believe that we need to support that dear country of ours to hold an election, transparent, free and fair election that will enable them to stand back again on their feet and hopefully lead to a process of political stability in that country.
From all indications of your officials on the ground, what is the feedback that you are getting concerning the readiness of Guinea-Bissau to hold a credible election this weekend?
The feedback we get are quite positive from the preparations that we have seen so far from the National Electoral Commission, from the Office of the President of the ECOWAS Commission on the ground, from our officials on the ground, and indeed from which, of course, will be reinforced by this official will be reinforced by a 200-member observer mission to be headed by the former interim president of Nigeria, Professor Emma Sawyer, to monitor the elections in all the state administrative regions of the country. So we are quite positive that the preparations, we feel that there are grounds to be optimistic that there will be free, fair, and credible elections. We can only ask the people of Guinea-Bissau to also commit themselves.
The newly elected chairman of the ECOWAS Commission, President John Dramani Mahama of Ghana, visited Guinea-Bissau for a day's trip to find out how things are shaping up ahead of the election. What else will he be looking at whilst he's there on the ground?
At least in one very important respect, and this is the respect that at the highest level of the region, the chairman of authority of heads of state and government, who has just been elected at the last 44th summit in Yamoussoukro, Cote d'Ivoire, has taken it upon himself to visit Guinea-Bissau to see how things are going. It just shows you the kind of interest that this activity has generated in the region, the kind of interest at the highest level. I mean, there cannot be any further demonstration of the kind of interest that the region has in that program than the visit of the chairman of authority. And I believe that he will be talking to all those who are involved, the stakeholders, to see what arrangements have been made, what challenges, if any, there are, and then how, if there's any further way that the region can support them, in order to make sure that not just the election is transparent, free and fair, but also that beyond that, that the country is stabilized.
Sonny Ugo is Communications Director for the Economic Community of West African States. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Nigeria's capital, Abuja. The International Organization for Migration says there has been a tenfold increase compared to a year ago in the number of migrants intercepted off the coast of Italy. As VOA's Pam Dawkins explains, most of the migrants are trying to escape unrest in Africa and the Middle East.
The International Organization for Migration says as of early April, almost 15,000 migrants had arrived near the Italian coast this year. That compares to about 1,500 for the same period last year, according to the group's Italy spokesman, Flavio Di Giacomo.
These are people who are fleeing from wars, the regime. The main nationalities are Syrians, Eritreans, Somalis, people coming from Mali and sub-Saharan countries.
One of those would-be migrants is Jackson Evex, who is from Nigeria.
I left Nigeria because of the issue of Boko Haram.
Boko Haram is an Islamist militant group blamed for thousands of deaths since 2009. Evex was among 46 African migrants who set out from Libya in a rubber raft with hopes of reaching Europe.
I want to go to Europe to continue my education for freedom and everything.
The migrants were intercepted by Libyan naval forces. Di Giacomo says last year an estimated 700 would-be migrants died as they attempted to cross the Mediterranean.
It is time to prevent these tragedies from happening, and the international community should develop a more comprehensive approach to protect migrants.
Di Giacomo says the international community is focused too much on border control and not enough on the humanitarian issues that prompt people to flee from their homelands. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. African champion Simon Magakwe seeks his fifth consecutive national 100-meter title at the South Africa Senior Athletics Championship starting today, Friday, in the capital, Tshwane. The two-day event is a qualifier for the British Commonwealth Games and the Africa Senior Athletics Championships. Elsewhere, Nigeria's finest home-based athletes who have been in residential training compete at the first Athletics Federation of Nigeria Golden League meet this year in the capital, Abuja, tomorrow Saturday. They too have their sights set on the qualifiers for the Commonwealth Games and the Africa Senior Championships. Meanwhile, Ethiopian defending champion Tsegaye Kebede faces the most formidable field ever assembled for a marathon race as he seeks to retain his London Marathon title on Sunday. The best include Kenyan Wilson Kipsang, the world record holder, Abel Kirui, Emmanuel Mutai, Stanley Biwott, Geoffrey Mutai, and Ugandan world and Olympic champion Stephen Kiprotich. Ethiopia's former world 10,000-meter champion Ibrahim Jailan and Somalia-born Mohamed Farah of Britain, the world and Olympic 10,000 and 5,000-meter champion, are making their marathon debut. Ethiopian legend Haile Gebrselassie will inject pace in the race for the first 30 kilometers. Staying in London, in the women's contest, Kenyan defending champion Priska Jepto faces her compatriot Edna Kiplagat, the world champion, Ethiopian Tiki Gelana, the Olympic champion, Abera Kebede, Feisa Tadesa, and Burundi's Diane Nukuri Johnson. Ethiopian world and Olympic champion Tirunish Dibaba makes her marathon debut. Elsewhere, Kenyan Henry Sugut seeks his fourth title at the Vienna Marathon in Austria as Kenya's Eliud Kipchoge is favored to win the Rotterdam Marathon in the Netherlands on Sunday. In golf, South African defending champion Jake Ross seeks to fend off over 150 challengers in his bid to retain the Zimbabwe Golf Open Championship title in Harare. The competition enters its third day today, Friday. Finally, in rugby, Madagascar, Senegal, South Africa and hosts Kenya are in Group A for the Confederation of Africa Rugby Women's Sevens Tournament starting in Machakos, some 40 kilometers southeast of the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, today, Friday. Group B consists of Namibia, Tunisia, Uganda, and Zimbabwe. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Mark. We also wish you a very good weekend and look forward to your report again on Monday. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, April 11th.
Being the fourth largest economy has no meaning to the common man because that is not going to put food on our table. Most people go to sleep hungry. Most people don't have jobs. Even those who are employed are grossly underemployed. There is no light, no water, no good roads. Education is moribund. So calling us the largest economy of the 26th in the world has no meaning. I pray that things will turn around. And the common people, we have something to cheer. Thank you very much. This is Ayodele Olujide Okeh. I call from Ibadan, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The UN Security Council Thursday approved an expanded peacekeeping force for the Central African Republic. The 15-nation council unanimously approved a UN-led force of 10,000 soldiers and 1,800 police. The force will become operational in September and replace an African Union peacekeeping mission. And South African runner Oscar Pistorius returned to the witness stand in his murder trial on Thursday as prosecutors tried to portray him as self-centered in his relationship with girlfriend Reva Steenkamp. That's it for this Friday, April 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, saying have a lovely weekend to Africa.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOANews.com.